Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by C.W.B. and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 3, Hoaho, New Friend. Summary, it takes him 2 long weeks to find just one who is not an idiot. Early October. The obligatory brooding period is over, but the introductions and pleasantries continue. Sherlock watches the other chicks, observes their movements, their calls, and mannerisms. Most stay pressed to the sides of their parents, peering out to answer banal questions about their favorite crustaceans or the view of the ice shelf this time of year. He meets no one of interest. In time, Sherlock ventures away from Seeger and Olive to make the rounds on his own. There are no suburb colonies, per se, but there are groupings among them, some as large as a few hundred individuals, some as small as a dozen. He has not yet made it beyond his own clan, which is the largest and most powerful of the colony. He travels now, testing his slides and leaps as he goes, learning the aerodynamics of his body. He heads to a nearby gathering of adults and youngsters, then another, all more of the same. They are all delighted to receive a visit from Seeger and Olive's newest family member, but he's looking for more than superficial aggrandizing. He wants intelligent interaction, someone with whom he can undertake daring exploration, important observation, and relevant work. He's not sure what the work might be or how it will be relevant, but he knows he's meant for more than ice slide racing and mother's cuddles. It takes him 2 long weeks to find just one who is not an idiot. Sherlock recognizes him from the second council meeting when Vela recounted the legend of Korora and Pono. The other emperor chick is standing apart from his family, kicking stones and ice chips into the sea. He's trying to send the tiny missiles skipping across the water's surface as many times as he can, and has only fallen on his tail once in the time Sherlock has been watching. The other chick doesn't startle when Sherlock slips up behind him and says, "A flatter stone and more parallel throw will increase the number of bounces upon the surface." Instead of turning, he adjusts his stance and the arc of his foot, sends the stone flying, and grins as he adds 2 jumps to his record. He looks at Sherlock then and says, "How'd you know that?" "Physics." "And what's physics? Aren't they teaching you anything over here in the Northwest Quadrant?" Sherlock winces to himself and hopes that the other chick won't think that was rude of him. He could not care less if others find him rude, but not this one. Sherlock wants this one to like him. The chick laughs and says, "Do we know each other? You look familiar." And Sherlock feels himself relax into a smile and says, "I saw you at the Equinox Conference, the night Vela told the story about Pono's heartstone." "Right, I remember now. You were the only other one there paying attention." A little buzz moves up Sherlock's spine at the thought of him being noticed. "Everyone else is an idiot." The Emperor chick smiles and moves up a step closer. "Come on," he says. "Let's get out of here." His name is John, and he is perfect. He's smaller and rounder, lighter colored than Sherlock, and he is beautiful. When that word beautiful comes to his mind, Sherlock stops and reconsiders. The constellations, after which so many of them are named, are beautiful. The curve of his mother's upper mandible is beautiful. Ice crystal clouds are beautiful. Can a bright silver emperor chick with indeterminate markings and smaller than usual wings be beautiful? Yes. More so than the constellations, because John likes beautiful things, knowledge and action and risk. They are attached at the hip immediately, Sherlock addicted to the timbre of John's call, his sense of humor, his penchant for exploration. Much to Sherlock's delight, John doesn't seem to care about his nobility, parentage, or council-paying brother. Better yet, John appreciates Sherlock's intelligence and deductions and even laughs at his jokes. They spend their time collecting the best skipping stones and making small piles of them where others won't find and disturb their work. Sherlock coaches John on his kicking technique, and soon John is breaking not only his records, but those of other pangs, too. Sherlock didn't think he would find kicking stones particularly interesting, but it doesn't take him long to figure out that it isn't so much the activity as who he's doing it with. They compare the scariest seal stories they've heard so far and question whether or not they're true or peng lore. Sherlock's stories are scarier, but he likes John's better, because John huddles close and whispers and makes his eyes go enormous when he tells them. They spy on the other chicks, and on their parents, and on the council pangs, and then use Sherlock's deductions to make up stories about them, too. Sherlock tries to teach John some simple observational techniques so that he doesn't have to rely on Sherlock's, but John's deductions seem to be more flights of fantasy than walks through reality.
"That one there, John. Tell me what you see."
"That one? Walking toward us? Okay, let's see. Female, 4 winters old, several older siblings, none of whom she likes. Her father died in an ice storm, hair the size of silverfish."
Sherlock is about to praise John for getting at least her gender and age right, but John isn't done yet.
"Planning her escape, has a tahu on a nearby island, but, oh, her tahu isn't an emperor. No, he's a macaroni."
"A what? You know, those penguins with the stuff sticking out of their heads?"
Sherlock looks at the ice and shakes his head.
"Eudyptes chrysolophus?"
"Mm-hmm. And her mother threatened to disown her if she didn't end it, and they had a huge row. But she's going to leave anyway. She has an ice raft ready to go, and she's going to raise little emperoni chicks."
Sherlock stares, completely befuddled.
"You are totally making that up."
"Am I wrong?"
"You aren't even trying. She can't have a macaroni tahu, John, as they reside on the other side of the continent from us, a distance untraversable by any type of penguin in a single lifetime."
"I don't know. It sounds a lot better than you telling me what she ate for breakfast."
"You're ridiculous."
John smiles and nods, and Sherlock wonders how it is that John considers ridiculous such high praise, and then decides it doesn't matter as long as John is grinning like that. The 4th day of their acquaintance finds them farther from the heart of the colony than either has gone before. They are high up on an ice formation, one that takes a long time to ascend for such young penguins, with much sideways shuffling and belly crawling to traverse. From this vantage point, they can see the colony below them, small dots of black and white moving about in lines and clusters. They see the ocean beyond, speckled with white caps, floes, and icebergs. They see the glow of the moon behind her blankets of dense sky cloud. She is low, but rising. They have a few more hours until curfew. John lies on his stomach at Sherlock's side, his bill tapping against the slick surface of ice. Sherlock picks up on the pattern right away and feels a flood of affection at John's need to do. He's up to something. It doesn't matter what, it's John something, so it's good. Sherlock leans down and repeats the sequence, hunching his shoulders in question, and John gets up and smiles at him.
"Let's have our own language, Sherlock. A code no one else will understand. We can use clicks and taps instead of our regular sounds."
"A non-peng language? Yes. Maybe scraping, too?"
"Clicking, tapping, scraping, yes! Here, watch."
John uses his bill to tap at the ice once, a pause, then 3 in quick succession.
"This will mean come quickly. You try it."
Sherlock repeats it, then creates one of his own. 3 rapid taps, then 1, then 3.
"This one means help," he explains.
"Okay, but what's the difference between come quickly and help?"
Sherlock considers.
"Want and need."
John nods.
"But sometimes those are the same." Sometimes yes. Help is always paired with come quickly, but come quickly needn't be about needing help.
Right. Come quickly could be about having a good secret to tell, or finding a treasure, or an extra snack.
We definitely need a sign for found treasure, John.
If John suspects Sherlock is teasing, he doesn't say.
Yeah, definitely.
He thinks about it, then stomps one foot down hard and slips on the ice. Sherlock watches as John spins on his belly, coming to rest at his feet.
That looks about right.
Shut up, you. It'll be stomp, stomp, tap, 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 tap.
Got it.
They spend the rest of the afternoon adding to their vocabulary, building words and phrases, instructions and place names, until they cannot absorb one more sequence of sounds. The wind is picked up and the moonlight is growing long shadows behind them. Sherlock is in no rush, but knows they shouldn't break curfew.
One more, John, for today. Watch.
Sherlock scrapes his bill on the ice from left to right, then stabs it hard between his feet.
What's that, then?
It means we've lost track of time. Our parents will surely send a rescue team for us, and you need to feed before you get all grumpy.
You put all of that into two moves, Pengit?
John shakes with laughter.
We could just call it run.
Penguins can't really run, Sherlock.
Sherlock rubs his head under John's chin in affection, and John rubs back. It doesn't occur to either of them that they've learned this loving stroke by watching their parents.
No, but we can glide,
Sherlock quips, pushing John onto the sloping path at their side. John squawks in surprise, then reaches out a wing and knocks Sherlock's feet out from under him. They tumble back down the incline, rolling and skidding and sliding for the exact amount of time it takes Sherlock to fall desperately in love, which is not very long at all, considering the height from which they started. Back on flat ground, Sherlock is dragging out his goodbye, sure that life will cease and desist until they are together again. He is dawdling in circles around John, who is scanning the crowded plain for his family. Sherlock knows exactly in which direction John needs to move, but doesn't let on, enjoying the confused look on his friend's face.
Find midline of glacier. Turn to the east. Take 10 steps to the south. Harry said to look for Andromeda's Peak if I get confused.
Sherlock stands next to John and taps out a clue with one foot until John stops muttering and turns to Sherlock.
Follow you? That was for follow me, wasn't it?
Good, you remembered.
I have been standing here, lost, for at least 50 heartbeats, and you knew exactly where I needed to go.
Maybe. Do you need to go?
We both do. We need to eat and groom before the council meeting starts.
Sherlock heads in the direction of John's family, sighing as he goes.
Boring. It's going to be all about the fledge, the crush, courtship, all of that. We're ages from that anyway, so it seems quite untimely to review it now.
How do you know the topic? It's just the regular half-moon meeting, I thought.
Might be short. Seal patrol schedules or shifting of the shelf, things like that.
They bump sides as they shuffle through the crowd, eyes on the darkening ice under them.
No, it's Mycroft's first presentation on the council, so he's picked a topic that's already been done. Information that a pod of plankton could grasp at a time that is not urgent. Therefore, the fledge stage.
He told you?
No, it's obvious, isn't it?
John stops and looks up at Sherlock with bright eyes. Sherlock wants to rub his auricular patch against John's, but holds still.
Obvious to you, Sherlpeng. You're brilliant, not like the rest of us, mere forsteri.
Sherlock doesn't answer right away. John uses a diminutive form of his name just now. Just then, just 2 counts ago, 3, 4, 5, 6, too long ago, he needs to hear it again.
You said, brilliant? Well, yes, you are.
No, you called me.
John dips his head down suddenly, urgently, needing to groom the fluff around his thigh.
Yeah, just kind of slipped out. Sorry.
No, I mean, it's good what you said. It's good.
John stops his pretend grooming and pokes at Sherlock with his wing.
Okay, yeah, good. You could, you know, if you wanted. Yes, okay, thank you.
John blinks and flaps his left wing just a bit.
Right, so does Mycroft have a mate?
No, yet he thinks himself an expert on the matter.
Doesn't he want one?
He thinks his energies are better spent on the council than on incubating and feeding hatchlings.
What if Corora came for him?
Sherlock considers both the question and the sincerity with which John has asked. He has spent long hours reflecting on the legend of Corora, but in the end his need for logic and adherence to the principles of nature have won out over mythology. He is not a believer.
Father says we are descendants of Corora, hatched on Mariri many millennia ago. But Mother says there's no way to know for certain, and even if it were true, everyone on the continent must be descended of Corora by now. She also said it doesn't matter, because the point is to strive to be selfless and kind, like Pano. I don't think Mycroft appreciates those traits very much, so if Corora came for him, he'd probably apologize profusely, but rush off to an important meeting with his sardine counter.
John laughs. And Sherlock is relieved. Maybe he shouldn't have mentioned Seeger's ideas about lineage. Maybe John will think Sherlock is stuck up, or too prissy. Sherlock tries to scowl really hard to prove that he's not prissy.
Are you okay? You look like you have to poop or something.
What?
No! Of course I'm okay. Completely fine.
Sherlock makes a mental note to never make that face again. From across the ice, a young female adult comes hurtling toward them, trilling and hissing with impatience.
Here comes Harriet. I have to go. Look for me at the meeting later.
Sherlock stretches up as tall as his fluffy downy ball of a body will allow, out as far as his wingtips go, and ruffles.
Okay, see you tonight,
John Ling.
Notes. Maori translation. Tahu. Boyfriend, girlfriend, object of affection. Eudyptes chrysolophus. The macaroni penguin is a species of penguin on the Antarctic Peninsula and sub-Antarctic islands in the Atlantic and Indian Oceans. It is highly unlikely that they would ever meet emperors.